Tomahawk Live Traffic exceeds customers' expectations by providing them with the highest quality humane animal control products available. Check out their new Pro Series Gravity Door Trap. They feature a door that sets automatically when you open it. No hook or plate setting needed. Use discount code KEEPITHUMANE for 10% off your order at lifetrap.com.
The Animal Welfare Junction is part of the Keep It Humane Podcast Network. Visit keepithumane.com/podcast network to find us and our amazing animal welfare podcast partners.
Hi, and welcome to the Animal Welfare Junction. This is your host, Dr. G, and our music is written and produced by Mike Sullivan. The last 2 days, yesterday and today, I have spent at the Jefferson County Humane Society, and I thought that it would be a great time, a great idea, to talk to some of the members here about where they came from and how they got to where they're at. So I'm going to have them introduce themselves and what they do at the Humane Society here.
Hi, I'm Rachel Gilman. I'm one of the board members of the Humane Society.
Hi, I'm Di Lorenzi. I'm board operation officer with the Jefferson County Humane Society, and I do volunteer work, walk dogs, foster dogs, pretty much everything.
Awesome. So one of the things that I want my listeners to understand is, like, we started the Rascal Unit 18 years ago, and we've been coming here for 18 years. So this was one of the first locations that we came to. So before we talk about the what we have done while we're here, how about you tell us a little bit about the history of the Humane Society?
Okay, what year did we start? 1915. Okay, I'm sorry. It was run by just a group of women that started out just wanting to help the animals. And through the years, we just got more and more involved in working with animals. I came on probably about 25 years ago, and actually we're working out of the old shelter, which wasn't even a shelter, it was a pound. A very, very high euthanasia rate. No medical attention whatsoever. It really wasn't a bad place. We started a levee, had to fight to get a new shelter built, and that was about 2008, 2009, we kind of started working on that. Took quite a few years to get the levy pass. Well, not the levy pass, the everybody to get involved with it. And it passed with like 68% of the county voted for it. So it was a very good thing. And that's pretty much when we started working out here. We started coming out, volunteering. Took a long time to get where we are now, which we are not actually a low, no kill shelter, but our percentage is very, very low. We're a county facility, so we can't be a no kill.
So when the Humane Society got founded back in 1915, was it a dog pound? Was it an animal control facility, or was it just like a humane society?
It was just a humane society because they did have humane officers. I think they only got paid like $5 a case. You know, they were just starting out. The county took care of the dog pound. We had no relationship with them.
And there was no adoption program at all at the old dog pound.
Okay, so they just picked up animals. They were literally like dog catchers.
Exactly. Right?
Like they dog picked catcher. Up a dog and they euthanized it.
And if the owner didn't show up in 3 days, then the dog was put down.
Yeah.
So when we started coming here, in 2006, which is when the Rascal Unit started. Mm-hmm. And I know that you guys were having a huge problem with diseases, especially like with cats getting sick. But I remember that Parvo was a big problem.
Oh, Parvo was terrible. At the old place, and apparently when we opened the new place, but we didn't really have any ways to test it. The dog warden would just look at him and believe that it was.
So probably some animals that did not need to be euthanized were being euthanized because they thought that maybe they had Or even just to control the numbers.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what it was. So that's when we really got involved and we got a contract with the county to come in here, our people, and run the shelter. And, you know, we did all the computer stuff and everything. And you know, we started the adoptions and we got involved with vets, getting vets to come in here and help us with stuff.
And with that contract, we basically did medical intake on every animal that came in. So they got updated on their immunizations. If they had a medical issue, that it got treated. We did all the medical care in the medical room in this building, in the shelter building,
facility.
Little building. And so animals that got adopted out were sort of cleared and ready to go.
Okay. So big improvement from just picking up dogs and euthanizing them to trying to find them homes and then actually taking care of them to find them good homes.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
While they were healthy.
I mean, before we got our vet in here, the euthanasia rate was ridiculous. It was just terribly, terribly ridiculous. It was very, very high. Once we got the contract and it takes two people, a dog warden and a board member, to sign off on a euthanasia. So I just can't go in and say, oh, well, that dog needs put down. There has to be two people to sign for it. Now, as I said, we have a very, very, very low euthanasia rate. Mm-hmm. It's if an animal's been hit by a car, if it's court order, severely aggressive, mm-hmm. or if it has cancer and it's really not going to make it. Yes, then we will do that. But no, if we could find a home, and we also work with rescues. If we could find a home for them, you know, we get them adopted out. If we can't, then we try to find fosters for them. We have a trainer that comes in now, and she works with the dogs. We work with the community, and we have umpteen volunteers in here. And it's a wonderful thing when you see all these older folks when they come in because they just want to walk a dog, but they can't have one. I mean, it is very good. You know, we're helping the community. And that's what we needed. We need to get together with the community to help these animals. And I think we've done a wonderful job.
Well, and it's nice that you have this nice facility, right? Because it's attractive to people. Like, I know when I was growing up, I didn't want to go to the dog pound or the shelter because it was depressing. Mm. And I was thinking, I'm going to go in there and all these animals I'm not helping, like, they're going to get killed. Mm-hmm. So I think that people come here and they don't have that mentality, yeah, and they don't have that perspective. So they come here and it's kind of like a happy place too.
It's exactly what
right.
it is.
Yeah, because it's a newer building. And then we also had the county doesn't have a mandate to take care of cats. But in 2013, we signed a contract that we could take care of the cats as part of the shelter. So that is just the Humane Society's job as well. So now we have a cat room and we're able to do the same thing for cats and have an adoption program for them as well.
Mm-hmm. That is really nice because all our places that we go to, they can only do dog,
right?
And there's nothing that they can do about it. Like, their hands are tied. They legally cannot take in any cats. So that's kind of nice that people here can bring either.
Yeah.
And then I want you to talk about the clinic that you guys built, because that was a big thing, right? It was like a big risk. And
it really was.
And kind of it was pretty amazing what you have been able to do with that. So you want to talk about the beginnings of that?
When we first got our first vet, we worked in our medical room, which is, what is that, a 10 by 15 room? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very, very tiny. And we started low-cost wellness checks for these animals. We were bombarded here. We were here till late at night, just giving shots, just doing wellness checks.
People were lined up out the door. People were waiting outside. We had chairs outside and they'd be waiting
to
get in.
It was crazy. So that's kind of when we started talking about, we probably need to look for another building. And it just so happened, our humane officer is also a part-time police cop. He was riding around and he saw a building that had been on the market for quite a few years. And it was like an old church. But I mean, it was a nice building. So he inquired about it, and he came back to us, and he says, you know, they want, I can't remember how much they wanted for it, but we put a low bid in. He says, well, we probably can't afford it, but let's put a low bid in. So we did put a low bid in, not even thinking that we would get it. And like the next day they'd come back and they says, yeah, you could have it.
They wanted to unload it.
And it's like, no, what?
That's exactly what happened.
Was. Yep. We're sitting here looking at each other like, yes, this is wonderful. Right. And then we just all stopped and looked at each other like, what the heck are we going to do now?
We were bored of like 12. I think we had one guy on the board and 12 women, and we thought, all right, you know, let's go.
We knew nothing about setting it up. We knew we weren't vets. None of us. We're not vet techs. We're volunteers at an animal shelter, and we did research. I know I contacted you on a lot of things. You know, what should I put here? What all do I need? And with our nonprofit, we were able to get through grants and everything. We were getting like a lot of the things that we needed. We rebuilt it on the inside. We had fundraisers, you know, to pay for, you know, different rooms and different parts of it. We have a euthanasia room. It was very pretty. We have an x-ray room, which was a closet, but it was a perfectly sized closet. We have three
exam rooms,
surgery room, animal holding. Our humane officer is also located there. And from there, we got another vet to come in and work, and we've been doing really good.
So what services do you offer at the clinic?
Well, right now, we do spaying and neutering of all the animals here.
Here at the shelter, here at the animal shelter, yeah.
Well, we take them to the clinic,
right.
Yeah. But these animals, right now, we don't have a RVT. We're still looking for one. So until we get an RVT, we can't really do any public. But we do have like walk-ins where they can come. The vet will check their dog and their animal, and if you know they need a dental or something, we'll refer them to someplace. Heritage usually.
Yeah, when we're fully staffed, when we had an RVT and the vets, we were able to do public animals. People could come in with lumps and bumps with their animals, or, you know, tumors and spays and neuters and all that kind of stuff for public. And we were able to offer low cost services. And that was really important for, you know, our clientele. And then we would run wellness days as well. And
we also have community care.
And we had community care. So we have a fund that we can help people defray the cost of their animals care. And we fundraise for that every year as well. And then with losing the RVT, we were unable to do private animals public animals anymore. And then we just were restricted to our shelter animals, spays and neuters.
Yeah, for spaying and neutering. But everything else we pretty much can do for everybody. And we do have it like once a week that they could come in. It's like 10 to 7 or something like that. And they could get their shots, their just an exam or whatever they need. Nail trim, whatever. And euthanasia, of course, you know, because they can use the euthanasia room. So I think we've helped. There's a lot of people in need out here. And it just breaks your heart because they cannot afford to go to a regular vet. And I've had people come up to me with baggies full of quarters, you know, and I'm like, okay, just keep the quarters. We'll take care of that.
Well, and even just yesterday, yeah. Do you want to talk about the lady that showed up yesterday with her dog?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, well, you can.
So we had a woman show up to get her dog spayed, I guess. Neutered. She didn't have an appointment. She had seen that the van was going to be here, and so she thought she would just come. Didn't realize she had to make an appointment. And so you were graciously able to put the dog on the schedule, and we told her how much it was going to cost, and she said, oh, I have $25. And we said, okay, we want your animal fixed. And she had to get the animal fixed in order to be able to stay in her apartment that the landlord had dictated the animal had to be neutered. And so we decided that, and Di decided, hey, look, you're here. We can get this done for you. It's really important. You can keep your dog and stay in your housing. So we defrayed the cost. Di defrayed the cost of
I picked up the tab on it. I mean, mm-hmm. I felt bad. She was an older woman and she was crying, and I'm not going to let her go away without having that done.
Right.
And that's why we have the community care fund, because these people want to do the right thing, but they just do not have the money.
Yeah. And I mean, it's so important. The human animal bond is so important, right? Especially if it's an elderly person and she doesn't have money, and the only thing that she has is that dog. Yeah. And then, you know, she's going to face eviction. And sadly, there are people that choose eviction over losing their animal. So, you know, it was a little bit of help giving her a little bit of money to get her dog fixed, but potentially keeping her housed.
She was happy.
Right.
And that's all that matters.
And the appreciation that people, you know, I strongly believe that everybody should have access to care.
Yeah.
And you know, if we can have them be responsible for it, great. But to a certain extent, to whatever they can, the most important is how can we keep them together?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I mean, she was very happy to pay the $25, and I picked up the rest of it.
And we had some food samples, actually. We had gotten a donation of food that had come in a few weeks ago that was actually refrigerated food. So it had to be used in a certain amount of time. So we gave her a bunch of bags of that, and she picked the dog up. So we also run, one of the other programs that we run is a food pantry. And twice a month, we have a site that we distribute it from. And so we get donated food from Walmart, actually.
Nice.
And we pick it up every other week in our van, and we bring it and we unload it. And then on the off weeks, we give it out on a Saturday morning. And so volunteers actually come and do the unloading of the van, and they also distribute the food. And we always have a huge line of people for that as well.
And the volunteers love it.
Yeah.
It's a good program.
Yeah. You can't tell a volunteer we could stay home, because they want to be there. I don't care if they're just standing around. They love doing it.
Yeah. Good program.
Yeah.
And do you have any requirements from the people, or is it as long as they show up and they need food, you're gonna get it?
We've talked about requirements. We bounced it around on the board a little bit of do you need to have a proof of income, or that you're on, you know, assistance or some sort. And it's a discussion we continue to have, because sometimes we don't get as much food to give out. We try to give it out fairly, not give tons to one person. But I think all of us feel like if people need it, they show up, we're going to take them at face value and give them out food.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I appreciate that, because there are people that don't qualify for assistance, right? For income assistance. But just because you don't qualify on paper doesn't mean that you're living paycheck to paycheck or that you're struggling. Yeah. And it also makes people feel, how do I say, like pointed at to say, show me your proof that you're poor. And then they have to show you a piece of paper to show you they're poor. And that makes them feel like dirt sometimes.
I would never go to a place like that. That's one thing. I won't be involved if we're going to start asking them.
And I think it's hard for people in general to even come to a pantry and get in line to ask for food for their pets. And so you just do it.
Yeah.
Because we have.
And I think now that they've seen how our volunteers are, they're real chipper and happy and everything. We have one senior citizen who actually makes beds, because she has nothing to do, so she sews beds and stuffs them and everything. We'll bring big bags of them, we pass them out at the pantry, and everybody loves them. And I mean, it's sweet because it gives her something to do,
right?
And it helps these other people out. So I mean, it's great for the community. It's great for everybody.
Yeah. No, and community involvement in general.
Because
none of us ever know when we're going to be the ones that are struggling, right? So it's kind of good to give back, because we never know when we're going to need a little bit of help.
Exactly.
So 18 years ago, I remember I came and met with you guys, and there were a couple other organizations that we met with as well. And I was very, very pregnant. I was like nine months pregnant. I had my child like a week later. Yeah, we met at the, I think at the college, right?
Yeah.
To talk about bringing in spay and neuter. What was that like for you guys, finding someone that was able to do spay and neuter, and how did that change the way that the Humane Society was able to evolve?
It changed it a lot, because we really couldn't get any vets to work with us. I mean, you could go to one group and they'd say, oh, okay, we'll give you $10 towards it. Well, $10 ain't covering anything for anybody. So we had been looking for different vets that travel around and do this, because we really didn't know anything about it. And then Sally had found out about Rascal Unit. So she contacted you. And then we talked to you. And I mean, that's what we wanted. We wanted to be able to fix these animals. We wanted to fix some of the animals out at the pound at the time. We desperately needed it in this area. And it has helped us immensely. I mean, you come like 2 times a year. And even when we lost our vet the one time when we got sick, you came down on your own and helped us by doing surgeries, and that kept us going. So we really need some vets and RVTs, but you know, it's kind of slim pickings. So
yeah, the veterinary shortage is affecting everyone, you know, and shelters in general. And we're hoping, you know, we have programs with students hoping that we're going to encourage more future veterinarians to do mm-hmm. community work and community service. And
yeah. And I mean, they used to do that like mm-hmm. years ago. I could remember all the vets in the area used to do pound the animals.
Give a day a month or something like that.
But they don't do it anymore. But now, you know, we have the Rascal Unit. It has helped so much. I mean, I remember the first time you guys came, we were at the college and I think we had like 1 million people. And I mean, literally 1 million people and their animals showed up at 9 o'clock. And that was crazy. We were like, oh, okay, this ain't going to work that way. But I mean, we learned from it. We, you know, we've evolved. I will always remember that first one because it was real hot out. Yep. And you're just wandering around. Oh, well, it'll be all right. It'll be all right. I'm having a breakdown. Sally's laying on the grass. And then Helen was just like holding her head like, oh, my God. But, yeah, it really helped us a lot. And I think we went 1 year we didn't have you. And then because Helen couldn't handle it. And I says, I think we need to get him back again. I says, I will take over running it. And I've been doing it ever since. That and made a lot of mistakes, but I've also learned a lot. So it's been great. Yeah. You've helped Jefferson County immensely.
Well, and that's all we can do, right? Learn from what doesn't work and learn from what does work and then move forward. Because everywhere that we go to operates differently, right? What helps here is different in other places. And that's what we consider cultural competence. Is knowing what you guys need and what your community needs, which is different than all the other counties that we go to. So I think that over the last 18 years, we have all evolved mm-hmm. in how to get things done properly.
Yeah, I know I've made a lot of mistakes. We've made a lot of mistakes. It wasn't deliberate. It wasn't intentional. It was just we're learning, and we learned really quickly not to mm-hmm. do it again.
Right.
So, you know, we're trying and we're doing it for the people and we're doing it for the animals. Right. We are not doing it for our own recognition. I do not like
and anybody. We're certainly not doing it for the money.
Yeah, right. Yes. Yeah, I lost more than I made.
No, and I think that it kind of starts with by bringing spay neuter and medical care, the community starts taking an initiative to take care of their animals, right? Then they become mm-hmm. not just the dog and cat that is outside. Now, all of a sudden, we're letting the dog inside.
Yep.
And now we're worried about the vaccines. And, you know, fleas and ticks are not just something that dogs get. Mm-hmm. It's like, let's take care of it. So we have seen over the years when people would come in and just get them fixed. And now they're asking for preventive care
yep.
because they care, right? Yep. Like, and they've been educated. We're all doing a really good job and you guys are doing an amazing job at providing them with resources and education so yeah. that they can take better care of their animals.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, we learn all the time. We've had umpteen cats come in with ringworm mm-hmm. and this was years ago and they automatically got put down.
Yeah.
Well, ringworm isn't that bad. It's not fatal. Right. I mean, you can mm-hmm. fix it.
Yeah.
And for how many years we lost so many cats because of that. And now these people, you know, we tell them, we explain to them what to do and how to take care of it and don't touch. And they're just amazed. They're like, oh my God, I thought we'd have to put them down. It's like, no, not at all.
Right.
And even if a person gets it, it's very easy to take care of.
So one last thing that I wanted to discuss, because you guys have done a lot with the shelter and then you have a website and an app and stuff and people can get information about the animals. Can you talk about that?
Yes, our system, anytime an animal comes in, we have we give them an identifier, and then we basically, our system links into Pet Finder, so we're able to put those animals out so people all over can see them nationally. And we found that we've had a pretty wide reach. We use Facebook a lot to put animals out there, but if people were to get on Pet Finder and search, they're going to be, our animals are going to pop up for them. And we're getting adoptions from pretty far away.
Yeah, from distance.
Various parts of Ohio and Pennsylvania and stuff that will see a dog and they'll want that dog. So, and then I think we get a lot of people that will call, go to the website to look for information about the vet care, the clinic that we have, foster programs or the rescues that we put on hold shortly now, but hopefully we'll pick back up again.
Even our shirts and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
We put that up, our raffles, and we get a lot of people that, they just want to help the animal. They don't want to win a bouquet of flowers. Right. They just want to help an animal. And I know that there are a lot of other animal groups out there that have a little more respect for us, Jefferson County, than they did before. Because we'll get messages, what do you do about this? How did you guys fix that? We never had that before. And it's all because we put our stuff on, Facebook, on our website and everything. This is what we're doing. This is what our humane officers are doing. And we do have a lot of other animal groups all over the country calling us. So.
And we have somebody who does PR for us. And I think that's been really important. Mm-hmm. So not just the PR, for the humane cases that come in. Obviously, we put a lot of focus on that, but PR for the clinic and what we can provide the community and what's going on at the shelter and other outreach things that we're doing and when we have adoption events and things like that. So that's been really helpful, I think.
Mm-hmm. To grow
our community, and the more people that see it, the more people then, comment on things and donate, obviously, because we're a completely donation-driven organization. Mm-hmm. And all our staff, we pay through donations. So yeah,
we get no money from, very little money from the county, and we get no money from the national, they have their own problems they have to take care of. All our money is fundraising and personal donations.
Right. We've paid staff at the clinic and here at the shelter. Our humane agents are employed by us and we pay them. And board members are all volunteer.
Yeah.
And obviously we pay our vets as well. So,
mm-hmm.
So what is the website that people can get more information and see all the awesome things that you guys are doing? And if they have some extra money, send a donation your way.
Yeah. If you would just get on our Facebook page, there is a link to the website.
It's Jefferson County Humane Society.
There we go. All right. So anybody that wants information about the Humane Society can go to jeffersoncountyhumanesociety.net. So jeffersoncountyhumanesociety.net. And this is the Jefferson County Humane Society. It's in Northeast Ohio, Steubenville area. So thank you so very much for being part of this interview and for sharing information, because hopefully this can be, give hope to smaller groups that are thinking we can't do it. And yeah, you can do it. You have to put a lot of effort, but you can't do it.
Small as they were, yes, they can do it.
Fantastic. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sharing and for everybody listening. Thanks for listening and thank you for caring.